Looks like we got 8:10 or there, a little after. Call our meeting to order, all commissioners present and a number of other folks. First thing on our agenda is a request for tax records information form that we need to vote and sign. Annual thing, Nikki just went over with us briefly before we got turned on. Melissa Trotter, Rick Finley, Gary Morgan's already signed off on it.
I'll go ahead and I move that we approve the request for information and audit of local sales use tax records.
Form number 4379.
There you go. And form that 3.
Nails it down for sure. Second that motion. Questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries.
No. That's after 9 o'clock.
Right.
Do you want me to get you a name for that, Kristen? Do you think you got it all?
I'll share it.
Okay.
What are we today?
29. Is it 29? 26. I saw the document on today already. Which was that you?
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Next on our agenda is land planning.
Okay.
And
Eddie's
here.
We go again.
Got Larry with Aegis and Bob, Mark.
On the packet I've given you this morning, the first page is the items that you agreed on to take to our board. And, of course, our board doesn't meet again until the month of June and everything. So I went ahead and put those together like that. My thinking was if we can settle on what we're doing today, we can take it to them all one shot in that meeting. So today what we're going to move down to is into commercial, industrial, and what I'm going to, for lack of a better term right now, is an operational term. Going to call overlay districts and everything. So we're moving down into the area where, you know, it starts taking in businesses and everything like that. What we had suggested, or what you have before you, is under commercial, two different districts. One, what we're going to call neighborhood commercial. We have a section in our code book where we deal with a lot of home-based businesses, bed and breakfast, nightly rentals, you know, haircuts, salons, different things like that. But at the same token, it takes in appraisers, people that would do real estate from their home. Some people may have clients that come to their home. Some of these people may not have clients that come to their home. Some of them, they may have a where they stage their business out of their home and then go and do their work and then come back and different things like that. But anyway, we're calling that basically neighborhood commercial. And most of this is addressed in our code book right now under the heading of special use permits. And our special use permits, as a rule, when we grant a special use permit, that piece of property is not used to designate or to help establish commercial compatibility for anything else that would move into the area. And what it tries to do is it preserves the basic nature of the neighborhood as far as signage is concerned and different things like that. So we've thought about that as neighborhood commercial, and then all the other commercial that we have would go under C2 or C3 if we want to change that designation, because we were leaving some spaces. But and it would be everything else. It's a full-blown business that they're set up to do business, that they're not living in the residence or anything like that. So that would be the C.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just point out, if going to the general commercial, I'd like to label that C3. That gives us a C2 expansion if we ever want to do it. So that would be my suggestion, is that we label them in odd numbers. That way it gives us a little room for expansion in case we come up to a situation years down the road that we need to create a C2 district. We've done it for residential. We did R1, 3, and 5. And then I think just reiterating C1, what he's talking about, neighborhood commercial, we're just addressing what we already have in the code book now. Just once again, trying to go with the existing uses and trying to overlay the districts based off how we've been doing zoning.
Any problem with that? Don't see anybody shaking their head yes, so that's, we'll change C1 or C2 to C3.
Okay.
On the back of your packet also, I've given you the pages out of the code book that deal with special use permits. What we have under there, I will bring to your attention that there's a couple areas that would need to be changed. We're looking at an industrial district, and I'm going to move to there if I could. And the industrial district is something that's very slim pickings in Taney County. We have some things that kind of qualify that, but under the definition of industrial, you know, these are people that create things from raw materials or do final assemblies, things like that. And we do have some of that. Also, this is the district where most of the time in most of the counties you would place your adult-oriented businesses into these districts so that you have a district where it is permitted and there's other rules that go on. Right now, in our special use permit, we deal with adult-oriented businesses through there. So we would want to probably remove that out of that section and place it into this. But industrial, you know, a lot of places you'll see it as light industrial, heavy industrial, stuff like that. But I think in Taney County, probably one district, and there are a couple places that we could identify as that, industrial, and then, of course, you know, build that as you go. But just kind of the place I'm thinking of offhand would be like your off of Reinhardt Road over there, you have the industrial park where they have the many warehouses, also up on Coon Creek and BB Highway. We have a situation similar to that we would consider industrial. So we have an I, just a plain I. We can call it I-1.
I'd like to call it I-1 because I think where this is a new area that we're going to be going into, and there may be heavy industrial someday.
Sure.
And that way we at least cover it right now, and then it gives us room for us not having to recode things in the future. That's just...
Anybody against that suggestion? Sounds good.
Okay. Lastly.
Now, should we take a quick vote on the other ones we've got?
No, we're not going to vote on any of those.
I know we're not. Danny, I'm just trying to get...
You're just going to recommend.
We're just recommending, maybe. Maybe. Sunshine. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning.
Lastly, in Taney County, there's been a lot of... requests from developers and a lot of different people concerning the ability to do PUDs, planned urban developments, specialty type projects, and we've seen several of those come through in the last couple of years where they involve a lot of different things. Our airport districts would be similar to that, different things. So as an operational term, I've used the word overlay districts, and in overlay districts we would put special projects, airports, planned urban developments, whether they be, commercial and residential or single-family residential, multifamily, where they're putting it all together, something like that. And what I'm hoping to do with this also is, there, as we've discussed before, and I hate to bring this topic up again, but we've discussed duplexes before and, you know, concerns about how we do that and everything like that. But I think perhaps under overlay district, we could give greater flexibility to our code book in allowing people to come in and address the issues and concerns why we don't allow certain things. We did that some with our height ordinance, if you remember, we allow people, if they'll come in, you could build to a certain height, but if you can address these other issues in a satisfactory manner and have the board approve that or the commission, whichever the case might be, then they can allow you to go ahead and do that. Now, with an overlay district, what I would see is a developer would come in with this plan. Here's what I want to do. You may come in first with the preliminary plan. And in these overlay districts, we get the sign-off of every department that's involved with those. We end up with basically a final plan that has been approved by Road and Bridge. It's been approved by the sewer district. It's been approved by the planning commission. It's been approved by the commissioners. It's been approved by planning and zoning. Fire districts and everything like that. So when they're all done, they say we're gonna have multifamily homes. We're gonna have duplexes. You know, we're gonna sell them individually. We're gonna have single family residences that we're gonna sell individually. We're gonna have some businesses. We're gonna have some industrial. They show us how they're gonna separate and everything like that. But we treat this as a unit. It may be hundreds of acres. It may be, you know, as little as 10 or 15, depending on what we would set the guidelines at. I'll recommend you to Springfield real quick and Chesterfield Village. And if you're familiar with Chesterfield Village, it is a PUD, and they have the Palace Theater, I believe it is, in there, several restaurants, several different kinds of housing and everything like that, but that's how that was set up. They came in with the master plan for that and said, here I am. Needs a lot of work. I've given you some general guidelines on the back of your packet for that also, but looking for something to allow some flexibility that we don't actually cover in our code books right now, or we don't or maybe at the present time we're having to say we just can't allow that because we have other issues with it. So
one thing, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out is that Bill Young, who does primarily a lot of PUD work over in Branson, this is something that's accepted in Branson. You know, when you're asking to put a zero lot line houses in, mixed use with commercial and all that, where they've actually spent the time and the effort to do a master mixed use plan, we really don't have a way to address it right now. I think the Fall Creek project, that was a PUD by plan and by design by Bill Young, but because we didn't have a way to address it, it became a very contentious situation with the citizens. So I think with an overlay district, we can call it a special use. I did, when Eddie and I met and talked about this, we didn't want to call it just PUD because we have I could say the airport. The airport could have possibly fell within this overlay district where it's a mixed use. Once again,
the Highway 65 project,
the racetrack issue, that could have, might as well say what it is. Everyone knows what we're talking about. Those possibly, not saying it would have got it approved any easier, but we would have had a place to put them in separate regulations on that, or rules, I should say.
In my thinking, they would come through with the total project. I mean, they may, before they actually start construction, they would have their final plans out there that would be signed off. And if they say, I need my roads a little smaller, at that time, Road and Bridge could look at that and say, this is more than adequate or something like that, and yes, we understand what's going on here. We have no objection to that. Eventually, it would end up with you guys because it is a land use change, but you would have the whole project in front of you, what they're wanting to build, where, how they're going to handle, in their development and everything, and then everybody would sign off on it before they would start anything.
What control do you have over something like Branson Creek's 3,300-acre master plan project?
Right now, Branson Creek came through and presented the whole plan and was approved in concept to begin some work out there. And they bring every new parcel that they open up or every new subdivision, everything that comes through now for reevaluation. In this situation, if you saw their total plan, not to say it couldn't change, but I mean, if you saw their total plan, that's what they would be held to unless they went through a process to make that kind of a change or something. So
every one of those, though, their master plan is totally changed from what they originally had themselves, and they had a basic master plan for the whole area.
Yes, sir.
And it's not anything like it was. So I'm talking about 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the County Planning Commission authorizes changes in their master plan?
Again, we haven't fleshed that all the way out, but that is something that would have to be considered and an agreement came to. As you know, just recently, even out at, as you mentioned, Branson Creek, they took in a new partner and have now decided to put, it's like 12 or 1,400 log cabins out there. And we're before our planning board recently. So we understand that, especially as time goes on and needs and uses change and everything like that, there would probably need to be some kind of provision for some change to happen. But I think, again, in my way of thinking, we would need to make sure that everybody that has signed off on that is okay with the changes. I mean, you can make it as stringent or as lax as you would choose to make it. It hasn't been fleshed out. I'm just looking for a way to offer some flexibility to the developers and to the county as far as achieving the same goals, in some way, probably not perfect by any means, but...
I was just wondering how you would handle it if they turned themselves into incorporated village.
Once they incorporate, of course, it becomes out of our hands. And,
right.
And we cease 3,300
to... 3,300 acres of property that's out of your
and,
hands.
And, of course, Saddlebrook, I believe, incorporated, if I'm not mistaken, they would be coming under their own rules and regulations. So if they decided to change everything, not a thing that we could do about that as far as I would know. All we would be able to do until that would happen is to hold them to the plan that they agreed to unless we have provisions and they follow those provisions to make change. So, gentlemen, that's those three.
If I can, this would be the complete list of, at this point, the districts that you're recommending for the county, not 40, 50, or 15.
At this time, this is whoever's chasing.
This is what we talked about, but we believe we could fit everything, all the existing uses into one of these boxes so that we could then start working on where the discussions really start, which is it residential, is it commercial, is it, you know, and we got to talk, we'll have to work through all that. But my thought was this is all we would need. But
I'm thinking we probably can get everybody categorized current land use into one of these. I think we probably can. We may have to be kind of liberal on our definitions in some areas, but as you know, that opens up to interpretation. You know. And I don't want to get back into ag again, but you know, is it rural residential? Is it ag?
Sure.
Something like that. But I think we can probably put everything into this.
Okay.
We'll find out, but I think we probably can.
Go ahead.
No.
You started off there. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to invite anybody else to speak. So you're it.
as you have. Agricultural districts, and you have things like that have taken place in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks with the purchase of property by schools in the Hollister area, mm-hmm. and the School of the Ozarks buying large tract of land in the Hollister-Kirbyville area. Does that change the land use?
When you get into schools and colleges like that, you'll most of the time, once they become the owner of, they become exempt properties and everything.
That's where my question lies, is at that point, when they have an ag program, then if they decide to go out and build a big commercial building that contains... I'm just going to use their hog operation, which is already in operation.
Yes,
but if they decided to, they have tracts of land that are, you know, when you're talking in the hundreds of acres,
yes, sir.
And they decide to put a facility on there for slaughterhouse, beef, whatever, then... Does the county have any control whatsoever over what they put in ag use areas because I've heard this exempt business before, that applies usually to the way they're taxed more than it does, but I'm wanting to know how do you handle it with their...
The only thing I could tell you, and I agree with you, exempt deals with how it's taxed and everything like that. Right now, if you come into our office and you want to build a barn on your property and you state that it's, you know, 100% agricultural use, we don't require a permit or anything for that. However, if you're going to do 100% agricultural use but you're going to keep your jet skis and everything in there, then we'd say you need a permit because it's not 100% agricultural. In the agricultural districts, as we're filling with this, we had what we called permitted and conditional uses, and in those conditional uses we looked at some things and said, you know, if you're on an agricultural tract of land, that's probably where you prefer to have a slaughterhouse as opposed to in the middle of some of your, like, C2 commercial or C3 commercial, but made it a conditional use. Now, how we deal with those conditional uses would be have to be defined. Now, is on a conditional use? Yeah, do you come through for a special use on the conditional? But by right of ownership, you can put up a barn, you can run your cows, you can, you know, have your animals, everything like that. But when it shifts to what's a little more of a commercial operation, as far as slaughtering animals on a regular basis, for like a,
or perhaps an industrial operation,
or whatever the case might be, then that ceases, or could cease, depending on how you define that, to be a permitted use and becomes conditional. That's the only way you'd handle it. So you do the same things with your schools and in all your different districts. You would say, you know, by right of ownership, of course, the school, you can build school buildings, everything like that. But now, if you're going to start a huge animal processing plant out there as part of your school and part of your training, I mean, they could probably argue the case that this is educational. But
they moved theirs, you know. I'd say that in the past, see, they used to have slaughterhouses and mm-hmm. things like that on school premises. They also had ag land on the mm-hmm. lake side of the school. And of course, naturally, they got ag land right in the front. I'm just wondering, you know, in those cases there, how you describe it. Do you put it, what one of these?
The case law would describe what an agricultural use is, and an agricultural use would not be able to be regulated by planning and zoning. There are cases that say that even a setback requiring hog sloughs and other things to be a certain distance back from the road, that planning and zoning could not do that. You'd have to, as a county commission, if you wanted to regulate that, you'd have to pass some sort of, you have general health capabilities that you could pass, as well as, I won't mention the other four-letter word that begins with C, but that's what you'd have to do to regulate those things. Under planning and zoning, you would not be able to regulate those operations.
It would be more health or safety or something like that would be where it would go.
But you said commission.
County commission has general health ordinance capabilities. It's, you know, within the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, they passed a statute that gives the county commission a lot more leeway to pass ordinances concerning regulating health concerns. So I think at least arguably you could do it under that general power, and certainly you could do it under the other statute that talked about centralized agricultural feeding operations and plants and that sort of thing. However, agricultural operations they'll be defined by statute in the cases. Actual agricultural uses cannot be regulated by planning and zoning.
And they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be, but the county commission. Health concerns, yes. But my feelings are that you reach a point to where you have three men sitting in a position that regulate. When it gets away from the health of the citizens, you have those three people regulating other people's lives.
I'm just stating that the power is there for the county commission by state statute to regulate things that involve the health, safety, that sort of thing of the citizens of Taney County. I'm not saying that any one regulation should be passed. I'm just saying that it is there in the event that the county commission would determine that there is some health or safety hazard that needs to be addressed with an ordinance.
I think everybody here would like to keep options open for the general property owner as much as he can do, whether it's by right or maybe some process he may have to go through or something like that to make sure that you don't have safety or health concerns or anything like that. But, you know, that's, again, you know, until you flesh this out, you know, with just the definition, it's hard to say exactly what you're going to do. But that'll eventually come down to you guys to look at and say, you know, here's what we're going to permit just by ownership. So if they come in and say, I want to do this, we say, here's your permit, or no, you don't need a permit, or whatever the case might be. But when we get into conditional, you know, it may vary a little bit, and then it may be something that has to come back here, but it may be something that we already have set up and say, you know, if you want to do this, these are the additional rules that you would have. That's why it's conditional. And if these are okay, then go ahead. So it would just depend on how you want to, try to look at that and define it.
Yeah. Those are the things that I find.
Sure.
And we need, myself. When you come down to three people, and that's where you find, I'm not talking about in Taney County government, I'm talking about in all government, you find favoritism. Somebody can do something and somebody else can't. And so that's what I find is a problem in some of the processes. Now, the identification of what you got for land use here, I've just got those questions of what a school can do versus or what a, incorporated area that leaves us completely out of the picture. We have cases like that that are lay in our nuisance ordinances where we have pieces of property laying right inside an incorporated area that we have restrictions, are restricted, whether good or bad, is what I'm saying. We've got a restricted area that they can't do something, and then inside the incorporated areas they can do whatever they wish, unless you can get them to adopt it.
School use, though, school, you can build buildings that you house your kids in, if it's college or below, and there are classrooms and that sort of thing, and that's school use, something pretty close to that. If schools get into teaching people how to work on nuclear reactors and want to build a nuclear reactor, you're going to have to get some sort of zoning to and all kinds of federal approvals and everything to build that. You can't build it just because you're a school. We can't regulate agricultural operations, so a school that's involved in agricultural operations can certainly undertake agricultural operations, but if they want to do anything else, they have to come through just like anybody else to get an approval that isn't normally a school use. If that answers the question.
We also find that if it's questionable, because people come in with things all the time and you go, hadn't heard about that, hadn't thought about that. But we find if it's questionable, we try to, a lot of times, present it to our board to say, what do you think about this? What do you want to do? Or to some of you guys to say, or a lot of times I ask Bob questions. What do you think about this? How should we proceed with it? We don't always have a set answer. And as things change, new things come up. Bring to your attention wind generators real quick. Do we allow a wind generator in a residential area? Do we require a permit? The footprint of it's not 100 square feet. What do you do with it? So if I want to put in a bunch, what you do, right now we don't address that as something. When that comes up, we'll just have to, take it as we go.
So, Eddie, we've now, it looks like we're somewhat not balking at all these districts. Do we need to do a recommendation? I can't remember what.
Well, if y'all want to add something or take something away or whatever, that's of course that's what we're here for. But if you want this to go to my board to for them to look over real quick and make a recommendation back to you that this is the district you proceed as it would affect changes, to the current code book, then be glad to do that. Our next meeting is the second Monday of June.
And I think we agreed last time that we were not voting on this.
Right. You did agree to take the agriculture and the residential part to them. Of course, we have not had a meeting yet, so the second page of this basically lists these other things with a few changes of C3 for general, commercial, and I1 for industrial. On your recommendation, I'll be glad to present this to the board and get their recommendation on bringing that back to you so that you can proceed with this however you would proceed.
That's what direction... The recommendation I'm going to be leaning toward, but.
Well, this is basically what you asked for, isn't it, Mr. Strauss?
Yeah, when we started, I thought this is where we'd end up. The true discussion will start after we establish this, because that's when we're going to start discussing about specifics.
Permitted and conditional.
Yeah, that's really what the discussion is going to get into. But we had to start with this, which is.
You mean there's going to be more, you think, more discussion
I think
about
we've
that?
Had, I think we've only been had. Doing patty cake for a while. So.
Yeah, as you begin to say, just as we did with lot size on agricultural, I believe originally when we started this, we had two agricultural districts in there. We took it down to one. We were going to have a 10 and above and I don't know, two and up, up to 10 or something like that. And we did remove one of those and settle on the 10. But you see the discussion that, that came forth with that. And so as you begin to start talking, this is this is always allowed and this is sometimes allowed. And as you go through these, they, those things begin to change. Yeah, I think the it's going to get a lot harder. But
this is, I mean, it's a good first step because we, I mean, obviously that's where the that special committee that work was working on this couldn't get to this point just because of you know all the discussion we've already had. So is it? I mean, are you guys both agreeable to the C1, C3, I1, and the overlay or the O district?
If there's any change in a district, is that a vote of, upon the Planning and Zoning Commission, or does it come to the County Commission?
I believe we have to go to, don't we have to take it to the township?
The way we're set up right now, I think if you're saying once, if you establish districts and they want to change a district, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's a whole other process to get it to that point, but if it's all up and running and this says, okay, I'm residential, but I want to make this commercial, according to state statute, if I'm correct, the process right now would be they would come through, they would present it to our planning commission, everything like that. They would agree if it's a good fit or not a good fit, but then it should come to you guys. Because I believe they're supposed to be the final vote on land use changes.
Oh, you're talking about districts. Suppose we wanted to add an R9.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You amend
at both ways. I want to try to cover all bases.
Right. The question is, can we add an R9 district after we establish this?
That would be a change to the code book. So it would come as a recommendation from our board to you. You would review it and say, you know, I need to change this or that or whatever the case might be, or no, we're not going to change it, or yes, we need to add this or whatever the case might be.
You do not need to go to the subdivisions, okay? I mean, that's when you set up original districts for planning and zoning. One could argue presently that you don't have to go out to the townships to make all of the amendments that you're going to make. But the prudent person, the chicken lawyer that wants to be as conservative as possible would tell you, treat these like original zoning districts and go out to the townships and have the hearings as if these were original districts. But after this, no. If you want to create a new district or something, it's an amendment to the
The existing code.
Yeah, like a change of zoning. Somebody comes in and asks for a change. Mm-hmm. You're creating an enlarged district, putting them in a different district, and that's just one person. You're not going to go out to all the townships when you make every change. There's a process for that.
So
it goes there and then to you for approval.
Let me give you a reverse then. Let's say we decide after a while we don't need an R5. That would be since the code book's in place, we can just simply remove that. The Planning Commission would make a recommendation to the Commission, and we could easily remove a district because we have an R1 and R3 already. Is that not?
We would have to have the public hearing in our regular meeting, like we would any code book change. We wouldn't have to go out into the community.
Gotcha.
And everything, okay. But to do a change to the code book requires a public hearing. It has to be notified properly.
Does that answer the questions?
It does, other than if you have a large tract of land that someone wants to master plan, and you had it ag, and then it went residential, but they also decided they wanted to, in the middle of it, put a restaurant, little shopping center, or something to accommodate the citizens that live in that particular area. What's the process at that point that they would have to go through? Do they come back for redistricting because you don't have it in that district? Or how do you address that?
Zone change.
It'd be land use change, just like what we're doing now. If you've got a district set up to where that fits into it, they come through and say
it's no different than what.
Right.
It is a little different than what happens now. You guys would have to approve it, and that's what needs to happen anyway. But basically,
it's still they go through the process of the zoning
that they go through now.
Yeah, we already have in place a process to change from one district to another. We've been doing that for years in Taney County. But the rub, I think, comes in that you don't really have defined districts in Taney County.
Right. So what we've been doing is having the hearings on everyone. Anyone that doesn't have agricultural land that they want to use as agriculture, or unless they're just building a two-acre house lot, they have to come before the board, and they have to ask for basically a land use change. That's exactly what they would do if they're in a district and they want a change so that they can do something different. They'd have to do exactly what they have to do now, no different.
Exactly.
Except currently we don't have you guys sign off on it, and you'd have to sign off on it.
Which we're going to add that process into this and all that.
That needs to be there.
But yeah, so the process wouldn't change. The only thing I would probably suggest at that point, Danny, just in that scenario you're talking about, if they knew that they were going to have a bunch of residentials and then they were going to someday put commercial in the middle, I would come in as an overlay district and just go ahead and get it approved all at one time versus doing it later. I would say, okay, well, let's just, because it would be easy to change it from, if they did a master plan and said, okay, we're going to have 100 homes, and in the middle we're going to have a commercial restaurant operation, dry cleaner, laundry service. I would bring it in as an overlay district, get it all zoned at one time, and then 3 years down the road they say, oh, we don't want that. They could easily get it zoned downwards to R1 or whatever, and they got it all done. They could use it at that point. They could either say we want to maintain or don't want to maintain that commercial zoning within that, basically a PUD or an overlay. Is that, Eddie, am I saying that right?
Yeah, there's always opportunity to change from one thing to another. Sometimes, though, depending on what you did in the PUD, you know, developers in Taney County don't always build everything. They'll build part of it, but they don't always finish everything totally out. So that's something to consider, but they could feasibly use something for their advantage and then say, I don't want to do that anymore. And as long as we haven't fixed it in such a way that we made, you know, roads too small or sewer inadequate or something like that, then they could come back through for a change to have that changed up or changed down. But again, it will end up on the desk of the three commissioners. So
that question was, that process was rolling around in my mind, and y'all have been talking about it. We've got a ton of work before we get there.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But when we get there, there's going, am I right in this, that there's going to be possibly a lot less cases before the Planning and Zoning Commission when it's all zoned and everything?
If you're already zoned the way you're probably going to use it, you're not going to need a change.
Correct.
And people who are in residential or commercial will already know what they can do, and they can do it without coming in for approval to do it, whereas they have to come in now. Those who have an agricultural area or a residential that they want to use as commercial would have to come in for the change. So there'd be very few people that would need to come in. Planning and zoning might not be a very busy body anymore. Like it has been in the past. It would be an occasional thing.
Planning and zoning committee.
That's what I meant.
The office would become quite a bit busy.
I'm talking about the board.
So in that process, let's use Danny's example of the unit, and they didn't do that commercial in the middle. And so they had to come back and do that change. Going to go through the same process pretty much at the Planning and Zoning Commission. Then they would have to come to the county commission to get the final vote. But as far as timing, I mean, it could happen at the next Monday meeting, where it's not going to slow up the process.
Right now, unless you make a change, and I don't know if it's state statute, I have to go back and check, we're required to have meetings in a certain order according to our bylaws. If we change that, I know some counties that have it all in the same week.
Right.
And everything like that.
A lot of it's because of performance-based zoning,
right,
and what they need to have. If our code describes what you have to have, the state statutes tell you how you determine, you know, whether you make the change or not. And it's up to the Planning and Zoning Board. They just have to have a reasonable reason, substantial evidence to change it. They can't act arbitrary and capriciously. And that's already the rules. They're not allowed to act arbitrary and capriciously. They can give you the land change. The only thing that has to happen is there has to be certain postings so that people can come to the hearing, just like there is now. We have to comply with those same statutes. And your question, I think, was more that will it take that long because the county commission now has to approve it? No, you could just you could just approve it pretty quickly after that hearing.
Right.
I got a question.
And right now, our Board of Adjustment has a meeting once a month, one night. They hear it, they decide. And actually, you know, when it's a land use change, that should immediately come to you at your next meeting for your approval.
He brought a very interesting subject up right there whenever he was talking that way, and it's been my concern all along, is that nobody's doing anything out here on ag land that's not ag unless they want to build a house, which they have to come in, or if they want to do a commercial project, they would have to come in. But the people that set in a commercial district could build whatever they wanted to. It didn't make any difference to, because you've got it district commercial, they don't have to come in, so they could just set in and build whatever they wanted to without the approval of anybody that lived in that neighborhood.
They can build whatever's permitted in that type of commercial zoning. For instance, if you're next to a bunch of doctor's offices and you have a piece of land that's not zoned and you say that it can be an office-type commercial situation, they can build doctor's offices too. They're right next to doctor's offices. It makes sense to have doctor's offices or other kinds of offices next to those types of offices. Whereas if you're in a residential area, yes, you'd have to come in and get approval because somebody in a subdivision might not like a bunch of doctor's offices in the middle of their subdivision. But you could get a zone change and allow that to happen.
Now,
currently, everyone has to come in and ask for permission to put in doctor's offices.
Now, I'm going to go back to what I was talking about. If you have something zoned commercial and you've got only two commercial districts here, and actually one and three, it doesn't make any difference what they want to build. In one and three, if you had doctor's offices, or are you going to say that they can't build
where you're permitted and conditional would have to be, that'll have to be established before that.
Right.
And there would be permitted issues where what you're saying is, yes, they would not have to come in.
Conditional they would.
But there may be a lot of conditional that they still would have to come in.
In your C1, what we're calling neighborhood, there's some pretty strict guidelines. It's not allowed to change the residential nature of the neighborhood. And there's some real strict guidelines on what percentage of the property can be used at the current time, what percentage of the property can be used for the business and things like that. So we're putting that commercial, but it's not full-blown like the next one up, the C3. But in C3, if they meet the guidelines for a single residential house and they want to put it on that lot, they could do that. Basically they could back down without...
They could farm the land.
Right. They could knock whatever down on, like he says, and they could raise crops. But then that would become more conditional. I mean, in that situation, you might want to say animals are allowed here conditionally, certain kinds of animals. But that's where the patty cake is going to start going away, as Mr. Strauss said. So.
What I think you're thinking about, Danny, is, for instance, you've got your commercial district that would allow, this may not be a good example, but that would allow a car lot or an auto repair shop.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to a salvage yard, that would be a conditional business that before that salvage yard could go in that commercial district, they'd have to come through the process of change. Or
well, whatever the conditions are.
What would that right. say? I mean, how do you regulate that, though? It's because you've got two districts here, and you've got, how would you regulate that? How would you tell somebody that they couldn't put in a mechanic shop or something beside a restaurant, a fancy restaurant, or a... or a car lot, or what?
No different than now. If you have,
I thought you said they didn't have to come in if it's commercial.
If it's a permitted use under that commercial title, say C1, you're allowed to build doctor's offices and restaurants, but not mechanic shops. So if you're building a doctor's office or a restaurant, you get to build it. If you want to build a mechanic shop, it's not a permitted use, it's a conditional use. So then, even though it's allowed under certain circumstances, you're going to have to come before planning and zoning and get approved for that conditional use. And it's no different than it is now. If you want to come in and do a mechanic shop, you have to come before the planning and zoning board and get approval.
Also, under conditional uses, you may find, and I'm going to take our adult businesses and alcohol sales, things like that. Yes, they can approve you for, right the way we do it now, you can have these, but there's some additional conditions that must be met. You have to be so far from a school, a church, or things like that. So, you know, it just depends on how it's set up.
But there's some things, though, that's kind of weird that took place in planning and zoning. And you say they have to come back. I know there was a business... And I'm not going to go in location or anything, but there was a business that had a restaurant that had a convenience store with liquor right beside it, and they wanted to put a restaurant in. And the restaurant that they put in beside it was questioned by planning and zoning if they were going to serve alcohol. And the question that was given to them was, if you're going to serve alcohol, that's going to make a difference on whether we pass, let you build this building, whenever it was attached to a liquor store. Basically, I mean, it was a convenience store, but it was a liquor store. But they wanted to add an eating establishment onto their building.
I understand what you're saying, but just as last week when we talked about this this individual that wanted to split his property, or it was said that planning and zoning made him split his property before, they would give him a permit. As I checked into that, there's usually a little more going on to it than just that. The individual last week that we would have issued him a permit to build, however he wanted to finance his house, he didn't want to encumber all of his property. So in order to do that, he came to planning and zoning and said, we'd like to split off this so that we only have to encumber just enough to satisfy the bank's requirements or what the bank needs to finance this. He could have built his house on his almost 40 acres there without having to do anything. But the only provision planning and zoning had to help him at that time was our minor subdivision. So that's the route that he chose to take so that he didn't encumber all his property. In this situation, there's a difference whether I'm selling alcohol that's containerized or if I'm selling it by the drink. There's different rules and regulations. So without looking at it specifically, I mean, you have to take everything into account. If you're serving open alcohol and you're having people drinking on premise, there's a different set of rules than there is if you're just selling. Or if you're just, and I think in this situation, there was a church nearby, if I have the right place in mind. There was a church nearby which precluded him from being able to do that if they're selling alcohol by the drink. So there's a lot more going to it than a lot of times, than we don't get the whole story right up front.
I just sat in on the meeting and just heard what was presented, you know.
Yeah, right.
All right. While we're catching our breath, can we hesitate here and do our payroll?
Payroll and minutes. You bet.
At minutes?
Yep.
I've got, how about a motion on payroll?
Motion to approve payroll.
Oh. I want to make sure you're aware of one thing. Because
the timesheet?
Well, no. If you were to change something like 16 policy and pay out something else, it would be changed.
Yeah.
So if
let me look at the
we've got jobs. That scheduled that discussion at 11:30.
That's why we want you to make sure that you would have changed something in one payroll.
we could just push it to the next payroll period.
That would be the ideal situation.
For this particular, are you wanting to eliminate this from the payroll?
No, what I'm saying is we could just say whatever, if we decided to change, create a sick leave policy or what is this policy, sick time policy, we would just have to agree that it's going to be a separate, the next payroll, not this payroll. That's really all he's asking is that we just delay it. That way we don't have to redo or change what we're doing right now. Basically, delay is probably the biggest thing. That's what I think you're saying.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
This is a, I can't remember. That's the reason I can't say because of them. I can't remember if it was an executive session or not that we talked about an issue that concerned payroll.
We did.
It was an executive, wasn't it?
But we're not changed. We just paid as submitted. Okay, that's what we agreed to in the executive session. As submitted. So motion to approve payroll.
I'll second that motion. Questions or discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. We've got a whole list of minutes. I have not got to the executive. So
the
executive. Ready for those.
Okay. That,
have you all read them?
I've read all the minutes, I think.
That's
executive
just, those are just the ones that need to be hit to payroll or hit to.
This is a bad time to say this. I guess because we've just approved payroll, but I would like to approve payroll based upon the signature of the employee.
You're going to have to help me. I don't know what you're saying.
Well,
two signs on the sheet.
I'm guessing what he's saying is.
I think you did get to a microphone here, so.
Whatever they sign off on should be the hours. We shouldn't change that, and that's true. But
can we do that, or does it make any difference?
FLSA told us it didn't make any difference.
Okay.
We haven't officially finalized. I sent you an email, Rick and Donna. Don, we haven't. I didn't say. I said Don and I didn't make Don and. We haven't resolved that final issue.
Yeah, I just wondered if that would
be
something we might consider in the future. But anyway, we've got a motion and a second.
We already voted
on that. Now we're ready for minutes.
Are you good with the other minutes?
We
just need to get that approved so they can hit to accounts payable. Payroll can't even do any of that yet until they get the minutes. That's why.
Do what?
Those executive session minutes are specific about personnel issues, and they can't make changes until they have a copy of the minutes.
Okay.
That's why those specific ones were put in there.
All right.
Well, but
you know what date it is, and we could do that one. Just one, isn't it?
There's two different dates.
But
we can do the minutes. Are you good with the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they all got changed. So, motion to approve minutes from May 10th, May 11th, May 14th, May 17th, May 19th, May 21st.
We also got May 12th. I don't think you said May 12th.
Was there May 12th?
Yeah.
I wasn't here, was I? Yes, I was. I remember. And May 12th.
Those were just clerical errors that caused us to
delay
those.
Yeah, so that's my motion, including the 12th, and I didn't read the 24th. When was the 24th? Monday. I'm going to leave the 24th off. I haven't seen the 24th.
That'd be good.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
We're going to do the executive. It's a little later.
Yeah, I think Chuck wants to read them, but let's just do these first, and then we can, at the recess, we can. So that's my motion.
I'll second the motion. You all right over there, Christy? Okay. Questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. And we'll come back to executive here before we finish up this morning.
Right.
All right. Okay, let's move back into P&Z. We had a hesitation after what comment? Where are we?
I just stated that there's always, when you start digging into things, as we currently go, there's always different little things that come out, and we've made the mention of you know, the convenience store doesn't normally allow consumption of their alcoholic sales on premise, whereas a restaurant would be a consumption by the drink, which is a different set of rules and regulations. And that's kind of where we'd stopped, and we'll move from there.
Well, my whole conversation when it comes to planning and zoning is that everybody be treated fairly. That's, if everybody's treated fairly, I'm going to be easier to get along with.
Well, that's our goal. And of course, planning and zoning was admonished by the commission several times in the past couple of years to adhere to exactly as the book is written. And of course, you know, the way it is now, there is some room for interpretation, and we've had some discussions on interpretation, things like that. So we try to adhere to that as best we can. Unfortunately, it's not always viewed that way, and some people, they don't like the time frame, they don't like the circumstances that they are instructed that they need to go through in accordance with the way we interpret the code book. But we try to be consistent with it and apply it the same way. I'm guessing a lot of times, you know, like I've said, you don't always see the whole picture. I don't get the same picture that you get from an individual sometimes. And we've gotten to the place in our office where we do a lot of research with everything before we do anything, just to try to make sure that we're doing what we understand to be done correctly, and apply it to, you know, the same person the same way.
And, you know, I used an example there, Eddie, that I don't see that's fair, and you used different things that you talked about, things that are a lot simpler than the consumption of alcohol in a sure. in a restaurant would be, and we'll get into all that before we get through here, but would be the fact that one person wanted to put up a sign that he could look down the street and see a sign that was a certain distance from the road, and he couldn't put up his sign because it was regulated and it wasn't a fact that it was grandfathered in.
Right.
You know,
exactly right.
Those
yeah.
kind
and,
of things.
And we had one of those a week ago, Monday night or Wednesday night, where you know, now you have rules and regulations. So the guy that has been in place for a long time, it seems like he's getting preferential treatment. And now the guy comes in and says, I'd like to. And I say, well, because this guy is here, whether he was permitted or not permitted, but he's grandfathered in, he precludes you from being able to do what you want to do. But again, we go to our sign regulations, and it says, if this is what you've got, and so we say, that's what we've got. And unfortunately, even one of my board members said the other night, he said, well, it looks like we're discriminating against people because this guy can have a sign, but this guy can't. And unfortunately, when you have rules, sometimes the first one in or whatever is the one that gets the benefit of it, and it does preclude some other people from doing what they would like to do. Whether we do it or whether the state does it. I mean, MoDOT says if this guy has a sign and you're so far down the road, you have to be so far down the road here, you can't. You know, they've got it out, whether it be for sight distance or safety or clutter or whatever they might consider, they have their rules also. And so that's what our book says. And they're classified as on-premise signs or an off-premise sign and things like that. So just trying to apply it, you know, what it says, and with no regard to who the person is or anything like that, just, you know, does it fit the rules or doesn't it? And that's kind of what we do.
This is kind of a rabbit trail, but you mentioned timing there in your last comments, I think. And we just came through a difficult situation at planning and zoning on an emergency waiver.
Yes, sir.
And we've done that. Somebody said maybe we've done it 6 or 7 times in the last 5 years or whatever.
Yes, probably that's about right.
And bottom line, I think it worked okay. I mean, I think, again, I'm bragging on the Planning Zoning Commission.
Depends on which side of the fence you were on.
Exactly. I think it came out right. It didn't please everybody, as you're saying, Eddie. But it was an awkward position for the Planning and Zoning Commission, to say the least. And that was put in for a good reason. I don't know what the reason. I think it was before I got here, maybe. Well, I don't know. So, but it was not appreciated by the Planning and Zoning Commission at all. And I don't know, should we pass a suggestion along with our districts that they make a suggestion on that?
I think it'd be very easy to make a suggestion on that. You shouldn't do emergency waivers. I was opposed to them in the very beginning. Greg Smith, who was the head of planning and zoning at the time, was against them. The reason they were done, as I remember it, is there was a gentleman who was taking care of a sick parent or something in another building, two buildings on the same lot, and they wanted to give him an emergency waiver to go ahead and build something. But you give an emergency waiver to somebody and tell them that if you build it, you have to tear it down if you don't get approved by planning and zoning. You put planning and zoning in the position of telling them to tear down something after they've already built it. And it looks to the public like you've already approved it and circumvented the entire process. It's not a good situation, and there shouldn't be emergency waivers, but that would... Anyway.
So, Bob, you said that extremely well. Thank you. Your suggestion to make that change is how should that happen?
Well, you guys passed an ordinance or an amendment allowing for you to do emergency waivers. And I'm not saying you gentlemen. I don't know that any of the three of you were on the board at the time. And it was against advice of both planning and zoning and the attorney. But
My question is, I don't think I'm hitting you, is the...
Do away with it.
I can have...
Does it have to come through Planning and Zoning Commission? Does the County Commission just do it?
Yeah. I would have to do a little research to see if Planning and Zoning ever recommended it. I don't believe that they did. So I don't know how effective the ordinance actually is. The County Commission approved it, and I think the County Commission can do away with it. But if need be, if you want to make sure you're crossing all your T's and dotting all your I's, have the planning and zoning people recommend that it be done away with, and then you do away with it. Either way, it needs to be not there.
Okay. Thanks. What do I need?
You know, while you're on that subject, though, and I'm not for that, but, you know, and I don't want to get into a lengthy discussion about this, but when you're in, got a piece of property for sale and people's wanting to buy that property from you and they have to jump through hoops or wait 2 months or whatever to decide whenever they want to, if it's going to be approved by a 9-member board, whether, and the old boy that's wanting to sell it, maybe he's sat on it for 2 years and they're sitting there with a check, which they're going to go somewhere else and buy if they can't buy it from you. It puts a strain on the economic development of the county as well as the person that's trying to sell his property.
That's why this would be a good situation if the properties were zoned as they're used or as they should be used. The properties next to it are used that way. If you had it zoned properly, then you wouldn't have a bunch of people coming in wanting to buy a piece of property but only wanting to buy it conditional upon it being zoned the way they want to use it. They would be able to look at the areas where it's most feasible to build a project that they want to build, and they would buy a piece of land in that area. They do anyway. They buy a piece of land, a restaurant, for instance, in an area where they think a lot of people are going to come because that area makes sense as a restaurant. But currently, since we don't have zoning districts, they have to come before the Planning and Zoning Board and get a land use change every time they want to do anything. If it's already zoned for a restaurant, they don't have to come in for the change, so you won't have as many of those circumstances, I think.
Our Board of Adjustment deals with making variances to our code book and everything like that, and I'm saying this for this reason. They have a very, very, very strict guideline that they have to adhere to, and the individual comes in and says, I have a demonstrable hardship. My land is too steep. I can't meet these setbacks. They have to prove that there is a legitimate emergency reason, or that they need a variance from our code book. And I think we...
Something about the land that creates an economic hardship.
There has to be some kind of a hardship. And I'll tell you, in one situation, I think this emergency waiver was good. If you remember, I think it was last year, you had an individual that had a family member that died, and he was trying to set up a cemetery to bury that person in.
Yeah.
Nothing I can do. Now, I do not like these emergency waivers. Personally, I do not like them. But I don't know if there's another way to deal with that kind of a situation. I don't know and everything. But I think poor planning a lot of times becomes an emergency. And I don't know that's legitimate, in my opinion.
So it was a good thing to have it that day, is what you were saying. Bad as you hate to say it.
I don't know if there's another way to deal with that, but in that situation, they only had 2 days.
I don't know that it was a good thing to have that rule in place any time. It was fortunate for that situation that he was able to do what he wanted to do, but if you want to bury your relatives on your property, you should probably make plans to do that.
I agree. I'm just saying...
Before they die, because 2 days, 3 days is kind of...
Sure. And quick. You can always store them somewhere, until you... They do it in Louisiana. Okay. But
that was Eddie Coxey that said that.
Yeah, it was not Commissioner Straffus.
All right, so,
Mr. Commissioner,
yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, we have we haven't heard from Assessor Strahan today.
Okay,
he's close to the microphone, and I'd be remiss not to give him some opportunity because
your opportunity is here, sir.
This has been entertaining. I heard one commissioner referencing, and you guys spending quite a bit of time on if something's on commercial, then you still have control over what goes in that area. I don't see that happening. I believe the city of Branson has some stringent zoning regulations. If I were to describe the city of Branson, but I drive up 248, and there's a medical building, a muffler shop, and a restaurant that's all been zoned commercial. I hate to bring those points up because I don't want to feel argumentative, but when I or seem argumentative. I'd like to think that I seem factual. That's why I point these things out. I don't want to say, because it's been bestowed to the citizens this morning, if they're listening, opposite of what I just described. And I'm sure the zoning of Branson is to take care of some of this. And that's the part that I dislike about zoning. Entrepreneurship of America is freedom to do what you want in your own premises. I, as the assessor, see this occurring on a daily basis. I see it occurring on a daily basis in subdivisions that somebody gets a bottle of Elmer's glue and glues a goose or some other figurine on a board, and they make a living. They're not a burden to society. That's how they make their living, is out of their garage in these subdivisions. Now, if we zone these subdivisions and these parcels of land, all residential, are we actually throwing a dagger at the heart of entrepreneurship in the United States of America? And you may say, well, these are relatively low numbers. No, they're not. If you believe that, you're not in the real world, because I have many complaints come through the assessor's office of strictly... My neighbor's working out of his garage, and I don't like it because it creates 2 or 3 extra cars a day coming into our subdivision, causing harm to our subdivision way of life. But then, and I'm all for what I'm fixing to say, yard sales can bring 150 cars an hour through there, and it's no problem. So, guys, I think in reality we like to talk. When we talk rules and regulations, and I said I would never say this again because of the response I got from people I was talking to, But if we're not looking at socialism here in some of this stuff, I am extremely fooled on what's going on. When we go to messing with entrepreneurship and saying that zoning will not allow this to happen, and I'm not talking about going to the Board of Adjustments, Eddie. I'm talking about this as reality. Set a muffler shop between a doctor's office and a restaurant. So that pretty well covers everything you guys were discussing earlier. That, oh, they can't, or yes, they can. So that's the part that I get disturbed with when I'm listening to the conversation of planning and zoning. And I also hear and see on the news of how trying to do what we're trying to do now has caused so much confusion in Greene County, Christian counties. There's always something about planning and zoning. We've got subdivisions not complete because it didn't fit what planning and zoning wanted to do in Nixa. Monetarily, there was a problem also, but it still didn't fit what was described, and it's a subdivision of $500,000 houses. But that's where my opposition comes from, and I'm not trying. I will come forward and tell you this. I am 100% opposed to messing with agriculture on this. I believe you gentlemen and the Planning and Zoning Board is 100% wrong for looking at agriculture problems in planning and zoning. And I'm pretty futile on what I've read in the past. Agriculture is exempt from planning and zoning. So this does appear to be a push into the agriculture community to control the agriculture community. And yes, Taney County's passed planning and zoning on a couple occasions. I think if you look at the results of the east end of the agriculture community, they didn't want much to do with it. It got pushed upon them as we're going to pass planning and zoning. So I'm really disturbed at what we're trying to do. You know that. You know that. That's why Jim was reluctant to give me a chance to stand up here today.
I had to point out that you were waiting. I didn't know if you knew we were going to stop 15 minutes early. I want to make sure
we
heard you.
I just wanted you to know that I'm not doing this out of being a farmer, an agriculture man. My family's always been. It comes out of being the assessor in my official capacity, and I see these things. I spotted the waiver that had to be applied north of Forsyth here because my men went in to measure the building. I've spotted many other things that planning and zoning needed to know about. But it's just a matter of where do we draw the line? And we heard about a tax situation where it was a bad time. I think this is one of the worst timings that planning and zoning could have to do this. Like I say, the economy is in the downturn, in a horrible situation, and we're going to start messing with entrepreneurship right here in America. And I don't believe in that. Thank you.
James, Mr. Chairman, can I respond to a few things there
just
for a second?
Sure.
One thing that I just wanted to point out, James, and I know we don't, we banter back and forth, and we're obviously on different positions on this, but we can get along. The biggest thing that I think that the reason I'm so adamant for planning and zoning is not so much taking in consideration the owner of that parcel, but it's the neighbors around them. When they bought a house, for example, in a neighborhood, the use was residential. And if the use changed, then I want to give the opportunity to the neighbors to say, wait a second, I bought the house because I thought it was a neighborhood. So I'm trying to protect the neighbors' rights, too. I mean, I've talked to many people that were listening in last Wednesday, and they made a point to come to me and said they supported your position. I said, well, that's fine, but do you want your neighbor to put, you know, a hog farm on one side and an industrial park on the other side? And they said, well, no. I said, well, that's what planning and zoning is supposed to do. It's supposed to help protect you also from your neighbors. So I know that, you know, we don't agree on this. And, you know, obviously I don't want to stop entrepreneurship. I mean, that's what America was founded on. But I also want to make sure that we don't just only focus on the property owner, but we've got to consider the neighbors on either side of the property owner because we don't want them to negatively affect the property owner.
I agree with you 100%, Jim. We don't want a negative effect, but where do you draw the line? The biggest extreme for planning and zoning that ever hit here was when we was trying to adopt, I believe, a new master plan that didn't occur.
Mm-hmm.
And a gentleman come in and said, when I built my house and bought my property, and I don't, if he's listening today, that's fine. He said, that other hillside, and he did like this,
mm-hmm.
in which it was about 3/4 of a mile from his property, or a mile, was all trees. And planning and zoning allowed a subdivision to go in there. Now, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. Sir, I apologize. I hope the county, I hope government hasn't hurt you in any way. But, sir, that's none of your business. This is another individual that has freedoms and rights mm-hmm. and privileges of what to do and when to do it. Right. That's what I get concerned about. All of a sudden, where do we draw the line on where we're disturbing our neighbors when they drive down a mile-long driveway and happen to drive past a hog farm 3/4 of a mile from their house? So when we go to watching out for people, the drawing the line part is where you guys are going to get into your major issues and your major problems. And I wanted to say something, and I don't know whether this body is aware. The adult entertainment industry thing has been passed. It's waiting for the governor to sign. So I don't even know whether Taney County has any business delving off into stuff like that. It's a state law, Jim. I don't know whether you've seen it.
I don't remember seeing that one.
It's brand new.
Senator Goodman brought it up. I remember that one now.
Yeah, and it's been passed. So, and that's the other issue. There's so many of this stuff covered by state law that I don't know that we need to be delving off into it. Thank you.
All right. We got a couple minutes left before we... Oh, no, we got more than that.
We have 15 or
so. Yeah, we got 15 minutes left.
So, Eddie, do we need to give you some sort of nod?
Let me make one more statement real quick. I had a lady in my office last week. She came in and she sat down and she said, I want to know what your rules and regulations are concerning home-based business. So I opened up my code book to there and read it to her and everything. She said, okay, so you've got rules and regulations. I said, yes, we do. She said, I want to report two people. So she brought it to our attention. She made the report. I contacted the individuals. One of the individuals contacted me yesterday. He said, so you're telling me I've been running this business for several years, and now I've got to come in because I'm running this business out of my home, and I've got a process I need to go through. And I said, yes, sir, you do. I said, as a matter of fact, the assessor, as I pulled up your property, the assessor states right out there on his document that you have a business in the residence. And you've been seeing that on your tax statement. And he said, okay. He said, well, I know 100 other people that have that. And I said, I know it's all over the county. And it is all over the county. And our C1 district would deal with this somewhat. There is a process. It does try to make the people aware. If you're having this business, there's a certain percentage of the property that can be used for that. There's, you know, we allow a certain amount of signage, you know, one sign, different things like that, depending on what the business is. But there's a process to get that approved. Now, everybody doesn't follow the process. Unfortunately, you can put just about any section of this code book you want, you can find people that don't follow the process. It happens. But there is a process for it. We're doing it today. It's no different if we call it C1 than what we're doing today. But it does try to help protect the residential area nature of the subdivision under these special use permits and everything. So this gentleman told me that he would give me a list of 100 other names, the people that I need to contact. And he said, I expect you to contact them. Well, we'll do our best to do that as long as they prove to be, you know, legitimate claims. So what we do now is as we know these businesses exist. I can't drive by somebody's house and see a air-conditioned refrigeration truck sitting in the driveway and say he's running a business out there. He may be just driving the truck home. I don't know. But as complaints are made, we investigate the complaints. Sometimes they pan out to where these people need to go through a process and get the approval for what they're doing according to our code book. Sometimes it doesn't. So, but yes, what I'm looking for from you now is, do you want all these to go to my board for them to look at and make a recommendation to you to chase that? And you also mentioned the emergency waiver. I don't know what you want to do with that. But
can I ask another question?
Sure.
Before you take this?
could your subcommittee start coming up with conditional and permitted usages under these districts, or do we need to continue this? What would you suggest, Eddie, with, in reality?
I think that's an easier part for us. Of course, everybody has their everything. I think we can come up with a list and put it together for each one of these and give it to you. I do think it would be very wise for you gentlemen to peruse that and then to say, I don't agree with this, I don't agree with this, and then...
So what I hear you saying is that if we say these are the recommendations, your committee then comes up with conditional and permitted usages for each one of these categories, you'll get that to us, then we'll have another work session to go over the ones that we have a problem with.
Sure, and I'll get them together as quick as I can, and I would think in that situation, one long meeting or maybe two short ones, we can have that done.
30 days?
I would think we could probably do that in 30 days, yes, sir.
Okay. In the next 30 days, what really is the next step for the commission to be doing then at this point? Because it seems like that's the next logical step is the permitted and conditional. The other logical step would be then to apply these districts to an existing use and see how that plays out in the map. Is that true?
In addition to this, in some of these things, like when you get into your residential, we have a single-family residential, we have some standards, 8,000 square foot lot, 70 foot of frontage, centralized sewer, 2 acres, 70 foot of frontage if you're on septic. When you get into some of these other things, we don't have any standards. Sometimes we base it off of impervious cover or amount of parking that you can sustain, something like that. So we might need to make some recommendations too. I mean, it's everything as far as lot size, minimum lot size if you're going to put up a duplex or a fourplex or something like that. Because right now, if you want to put up a duplex, the only thing we have, it says you either have to do it as condominium style of ownership or you have to provide 3 acres for it. So I think in addition to that, there would be some recommendations that you would need to look at and consider, which you will need a work session. Okay. And you can have that before. We can have that to you within 30 days, and you can have that before to peruse and then go from there, I suppose.
Okay. I got a little question that might not make any difference. James brought up an interesting issue pertaining to retirees and seniors, and we have a senior issue that's going to be on the ballot. The fact that their incomes have to be supplemented, and those businesses that they run are run out of their homes. And as a lady talked to me the other day, that she had actually went out of business because she said she drove down T Highway to a job site, and there was 7 lawn mowing services that she counted as she went to T Highway to do her job. Do those people, do they have to have a business permit through the county? Or how does that operate? Or where are the seniors that work out of their homes for supplemental income? Where are they at in this mix? Or why are they not going to have an interest in what we do in P&Z?
Our position is if you are staging a business out of your residence or operating a business, depending on what you might do, actually run a gunsmith out of one of your bedrooms, something like that, but you may have that as your office where all your calls come in and you stage out of that and go somewhere else. So if you're staging a business or running a business from your premise or your property there, we would say that you would need a special use permit for business in the home, and that's what our code book states. Now, I can't drive by the house and tell if this individual works for a lawn service and he's just driving the vehicle home. We have an individual that would work for a trash hauling service, and he drove the truck home. He worked for somebody else. It wasn't his business. Now, we may have an issue with him parking that on the street or something like that, but that's basically his transportation. He doesn't have a business in that house.
I know. I'm just getting into it. I mean, whenever we get to this other point that these guys are wanting to move on to, that when we get to that point, where do we establish that they're working a commercial business and these lawn, you know, that the lawn mowing service, and please forgive me if you're out there listening, because I'm just using this for an example, and the lady that worked for me that had to go out of business because there was so many, and then I had another gentleman that stopped in and said that he had decided that he was going in the business and was going to do business 10% less than whatever they were being quoted. Then you have, for a while, the crafts was a great big deal that people working out of their garages with all sorts of different crafts. You couldn't pass by a location in Taney County that you didn't see a grapevine wreath business or a duck wings flying around or a water sprinkler system with a deal. So where do you draw the line on commercial business? Are you going to stop by and tell these people that they can't do that no more? They're operating a commercial business? Or what I'm trying to say is, where does this really get sticky?
Well, that's and there's two parts to that, Danny. Mr. Strahan, excuse me. If you're operating a business, of course, you need a business license, and that's handled through a different department. We don't issue license or anything like that. When we have a complaint or a question, if we see a flyer, if we have an internet website, we see an ad in the newspaper, and all these things are things that have happened within this last year, advertising somebody's performing a service for monetary gain, then we contact them and say, it appears that you're running or staging a business out of your property. Sometimes they'll say, I am not, and they'll talk to us a while, and we'll be convinced that they're not, and so we pursue it no further. If they say, yes, I am, then we say, well, we have a provision for special use permits that you need to come through, and we get them into that process. If they tell us they do and they're a little bit hesitant to want to go through the process, of course, we have a series of letters that we send in the process that we go through. But normally we contact them first to verify if they're adamant that it's not, and we don't see any evidence to the contrary. We don't go any further. We contact the person that's complained or anything, or we keep a file on it so that if it comes up again, we can say we were out here. And that does happen. It happened last Friday. I went to a business out here on 160 in that same kind of situation. But so you know, we try to verify it because we have a provision in our code book that says, you know, if you're running or staging a business out of a residential structure, then there's rules and regulations and there's guidelines for that. So now we don't ride around and stop every house and look at every truck that's in the driveway, or maybe the guy's doing woodworking as a hobby. He may give his stuff away. He may not sell a thing. And his garage may be cluttered, and he may have all kind of equipment in there. And, you know.
But I say that just strictly for the concern of the citizens that live in this county that have voted and participate in all those things that we're talking about. Because we start down, and we're on the big stuff now.
Yeah.
But when we start down to the little stuff, well, then you're going to end up with you could have a group full of seniors in here that that operate a business to supplement their income.
Mm-hmm.
And that's turned into a situation that is...
It's necessary.
It's a necessity. It's something that they live with. The extra dollars they make, and I don't want government to tell them what to do. And I think that of all the things that there is that the assessor and I agree on, and all the things that we disagree on, as brothers, we disagreed on lots of things throughout the years, but I think we totally agree on this situation for the people that we see in small business are trying to sit around at their home and think of some way of supplementing their income. Mm-hmm. And that's who I think we try to stand up for.
And unfortunately, when you make rules, they apply to everybody, whether they're young or old or fixed income or not. If I make a rule that says this kind of small business is not required, but this guy over here is taking one or two motorcycles a year and changing them into three-wheelers and everything. You know, it's hard to draw a line there. I understand what you're saying. There's things I'm sure that can be done once it's thought about how you want to handle that. Or but and in addition to that, for them to go through the process, it does cost them having an additional cash outlay, you know, from their pocket, which on their meager income to begin with. I understand that, but we know, again, we try to apply this fairly. We don't go out cruising and making, okay, raise your garage, let me see what you're doing. You know,
right,
I don't stop every Avon car, Mary Kay car, anything like that.
I wasn't insinuating that. I was just talking about the...
But you know, as it comes to our attention, again, I've been admonished twice in this past year by a judge. If we know about it and it's in our code book and we don't do anything about it, we better take heed of our actions and everything. So so as it comes to our attention, we do have to deal with it. And, of course, people don't like getting a letter from our office that says, you know, I need to question you about this.
I would like to say just one final statement on this, the way this went.
Don't get me wrong that these people are doing something illegal, because most of them have their fictitious name filed with the Secretary of State and have all their proper paperwork with the state regulations. So it isn't something that somebody's sneaking around trying to do it. My aspect of this whole thing is, when you zone something residential, does that kill this opportunity for individuals?
Not right now, because we have...
Not right now, but I'm talking about the new zoning.
Well, and that's why that one C1 district would take care of that, and it would still allow that kind of thing.
That's where I was going.
So we've talked about this before on this particular issue that's on the table. When we have the public meetings, folks that had those kind of things going on in their property could request that the Zone B, C1, or whatever you're talking about.
Sure.
And then it wouldn't be...
And at that particular time, I want to speak out of class here. At that particular time, other counties have given people the opportunity to say, this is actually what's going on here, and then set that up with maybe not having to go through the whole procedure. This is what it is. You know, they might check it out and make sure that they've got their access parking, stuff like that going on. But from that time on, once you set that in place... Then your records, you know, might be kept from that if they chose to willingly change that to that C1. So, just that's something to consider. I don't know. So,
okay. All right. Questions, comments? Or Mark, got a?
I just wanted to make sure, because we're not going to get to look over this next time until we're at the planning and zoning meeting. So C2. Is going to get changed to C3.
Correct.
And industrial will be I1.
Correct.
And then I just wanted to ask, as we were in this discussion about people, entrepreneurs, having things going on at their house, some of them end up becoming commercial, but others are also going to be a special use. So is that something that we need to have written up in one of these areas?
Currently, when somebody comes through with the project, regardless of what the use might be, we evaluate it based on our special use criteria. You know, we have a certain amount of the house can be used, a certain amount of parking, a certain amount of signage, everything like that.
Right.
And sometimes those things just don't qualify to be a special use.
But some do, and we approve special uses. So I'm wondering, do we need our...
Well, and if it was going to be special use, then we would put it in C1.
Okay, so that's where the special use...
And that's the intention. Now, we may have to do something with that later on. But if it won't fit special use... then it becomes C.
Well, that's why I was just wondering here. Is that another...
Or C3, excuse me.
Another category that we might want to look at creating before this goes to planning and zoning? Because special use is something that we deal with now, where we approve people as a special use.
In special use right now, we would do bed and breakfast. We would do... Just about everything we do with special use requires the individual to live on premise, pretty much.
The deal with special use is you can't use it to show that the
established
nature
commercial
of the neighborhood has changed, so that you can change the zoning right next to it to the same as the special use.
Okay.
And so that makes it a little bit different than actually permitting it within the zone or changing the zoning.
We may need
so
to change...
If it was in a subdivision and they have that special use permit that was approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission, then they would just stay, it would just show on this category, it's just going to show up as an R1 or in a residential.
Actually, on the zoning map, it would show up as C1. Now, how it's actually assessed is a different issue. He may still assess that as R1. Yes, sir.
Okay, that's why I was bringing it up, because then if it's showing up as C1 in a subdivision, then you might have other questions where someone's going to come in and say, well, that's approved C1.
And
this is a residential area, so I want to put a C1 right beside it.
And perhaps, and again, that's why we attach that to the special use. And perhaps, with that vein of thinking, that would better be an R7 or something like that. I don't know.
Okay, well, it was just because of James bringing that up that mm-hmm. I thought I might go ahead and mention that, because it was, you know, we might want to add that category mm-hmm. in, or or go ahead and, you know, have these go to the Planning Zoning Commission, and then that's something we can look at adding.
Currently, they, you know, this would indicate that they're using that property as income-producing property, but it is a special use, and as you know, our special use is particular to the person and to the property,
right.
And if any one of those changes, that goes away. So if you were to sell your house and move, the next person that moved in there wouldn't, under our old rules, wouldn't necessarily have the right to C1, but...
Well, the point I was making is that you have a subdivision, residential. Someone looks at how that's categorized,
sure.
and it's a C1 is showing up there. So they're thinking all of a sudden, now I can come in with my C1.
Yeah. Well, as you devise your definitions and everything like that, again, under your C1, permitting conditional uses, you know, as a conditional use, you know, C1 may require a special use permit.
You wouldn't put C1 just because it's a special use permit and it's an R5. You wouldn't call it C1. You'd call it R5 with a special use.
Okay, well, Eddie had brought up that it would show us a C1 in our conversation just started.
I would think you would, if you're going to have the designation, you're going to show that designation on the map.
But you haven't changed the zoning to C1.
Right.
So it's still an R5 or whatever.
Okay.
You've just given a special use in that area. It's still within a...
Okay, well, that'll just be something we can look at down the way. I just thought I would mention it now to see if they wanted to add in a special use.
All right, very good. Anything else before we move on to the next one? Frank, quick one.
Just a quick comment. I would ask that whatever we do, we're cautious in that we don't create a direct conflict or problem for the assessor as we move forward with these districts, that he's on board with everything that we're doing and we don't enact or create something that would be in direct conflict with what he has going.
Again, zoning going up has no problem. It's the coming down. If somebody's using it for commercial and you zone it agricultural, they're going to complain anyway. I mean, they're going to say they're a prior non-conforming use or whatever. But just because you're agricultural doesn't mean you get taxed commercial because it's zoned commercial. It's the actual use of the property and not how it's zoned. So there shouldn't be a conflict.
Okay.
I've sat with the assessor some, and I think he understands that I know this can have a big impact and everything. And my intention is before we do anything much that he and I will probably become best buddies and everything. So, but I do understand that it does impact it quite a bit, and we've seen in the past just a little change can really have some big ripples and everything. So don't want to do anything like that, and I will spend as much time with Mr. Strahan as I can to make sure that we don't do that.
Sheila?
She wants to say.
When we did. I've not had a chance and don't, would just do it personally, not my role as collector, need to look at the zonings and so forth. But one of the girls just overheard you were talking about licenses, merchant's license, and so I was just trying to be assured that what you're doing isn't trying to tie it to we issue merchant's license. It's not trying to tie it into merchant's license in any way, is it?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
No.
Because the requirements are not the same.
Right. It doesn't have a thing to do with that.
Thank you.
It has to do with the lawnmower service that the guy's operating out of his home mm-hmm. and the lawnmower setting in his driveway
mm-hmm.
with maybe two mowers and
yeah.
three or four weed eaters
mm-hmm.
and it's parked in a mm-hmm. concrete driveway and he's mm-hmm. getting his calls from there, and we don't want to make
yeah.
government tie down
right.
the retirees. Taney County is mainly made up of retirees and senior citizens and so on and so forth, and we don't want to restrict their lifestyle. They move here for the pleasure and beauty of the Ozarks not to be regulated to death on what they might want to supplement their income.
Yes, thank you. And the state does not look upon them needing a merchant's license either. They're not required by the state to have it.
All right. Anything else? Okay, we'll ready to go ahead and hear Mr. Barnwell. John?
Yep.
Ready for you, sir. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Thanks. Doing good. Well. You doing all right Thanks. Today?
The people here from planning and zoning, just are they done?
Yes.
Okay. Now, as far as the emergency waiver, we're not going to do anything with that. I'm not going to have my board make a recommendation.
No, go ahead and make a recommendation.
Okay. All right.
Just want
to make sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for time.
Yep. Thank you.
Hey, Eddie, would you, the press may want, the media, not press, but the media may want what you provided, those first two pages? Yeah.
That's what I have before.
You may want to change the numbers and just. If you wanted to send it to Nikki, Nikki then could email it out to all the media.
I will do it.
Thank you,
sir. Sounds
like
a good plan. Okay, Sean.
Good morning. We've identified two additional grants we'd like to go forward with applying for our project, and I'd like to discuss those with you this morning.
Sean, before you go in for it, these are tied to the same project that you have come before us. Before
yes, sir.
Okay.
These all have to do with the White River Emergency Communications Project.
Right.
And the first one is the same exact grant that we applied for, or you applied for last year for the project. It's the Edward Byrne Memorial JAG grant, which is a federal grant. It's formula funded. That first sheet that you have there just gives the title of the project and the deadline. The second sheet is the allocations for Missouri, and on the second page of that, which is actually the third page in your stapled, it has Taney County and Branson. The total that we're allowed to apply for is $27,265. And last year, we utilized this money for software. And I haven't got to talk to the sheriff. He's out this week. What I thought is we would just continue to use it for what we used last year. I've found that any grants that we can find to reduce our total cost make our project happen that much quicker. And so my hopes are that we could utilize this. It really doesn't matter whether we put this forward to hardware or software. The bottom line is the amount of money that it takes to make our goal happen still reduces. So.
Do you want us to pass? You said you got two phases. This you want us to pass these one at a time, or both at a time?
The grants themselves.
Both at one time. Yeah, the application for the grants.
It's totally up to you.
Okay.
I don't think it really matters to me one way or the other. So.
So this.
Do we want to talk to Jimmy's? What I'm saying. My question was, or we know that he has more. Need all the time. Sounds like a song, doesn't it?
I have personally talked to him about this grant. What I haven't talked to him is exactly what we're going to use this money for. This is a direct allocation to his department and to the Branson Police Department. And because they have called us a desperate
jurisdiction.
Yes, sir. Desperate jurisdiction. They have put us together, which means we can apply for this all together at once, which makes it very handy for our project. So what I'm seeking here today is your approval to apply on your behalf for this money for the White River project.
Motion to do so.
Second.
There are no
local
funds.
No matching
funds.
That's correct, sir.
Yep.
No matching funds, Sean.
No matching funds.
So this is just free money, grant money to for a certain purpose.
yes, we can justify it for whatever purpose we deem necessary, as long as it fits within the Department of Justice's requirements, which would be, last year it was for software, so there would be no problems there. Same with hardware. Right.
And you just want them to approve the application?
Yes, sir.
And there, my understanding is there still has to be memorandums of understanding or intergovernmental agreements or whatever you call them between us and Branson.
Correct. The whole grant would have to be written. I just want your approval to go forward with writing that grant, and the only signature that's required is the presiding commissioner.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I got one question. Before, when you brought a grant to us, and I thought it was this same grant, but it contained other incorporated areas.
That was a COPS grant.
Was that the COPS grant?
It very well could be. On this one as well, the next page down is the actual application for the grant. And under that, under Section 12, it's the areas affected by the project. Because it's a county project, I've included all the cities.
Okay.
So it will affect every city and every municipality within Taney County.
All right. I thought you had mentioned that before, and I just wanted to make sure that kind of got over the air. And
yes, sir. This is a direct formula to Branson and to the Taney County Sheriff's Office. However, because this will affect every agency under Taney County's control.
All right. I've got a motion on the floor, so
he seconded it.
Other questions? Now, is this the form that'll need to be signed that we're looking at, or you got something else to put together?
No, sir. The deadline for this is actually June 30th. So what I'm looking for is your permission to go ahead and apply for the grant, and then I will bring the forms that need your signature.
Okay.
If you'd like, I'll take them to Mr. Paulson. And
great.
Then
that's what we want to do, isn't
yep.
it? All right. Any other questions or comments? Ready to vote?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate you working on these things.
I have one more.
All right.
It's the last page there. This is a state grant. This is also a JAG grant. What happens with these formula grants is a certain percentage goes directly to jurisdictions that have a certain crime amount, which is what you just did. That was the formula that we just did for Branson and Taney County. Then there are other jurisdictions that don't have a certain allotted amount of crime, and their amounts or their allocations go directly to the state. And so then the state turns around and provides grants. It's a competitive grant process instead of a formula process. For this state JAG grant, I would like to apply on behalf of the cities of Merriam Woods and Rockaway and Forsyth. And because it's a group project, it's best to do it at the top county level, which would be from you. I have talked to the state coordinator. There's not a lot of hope in getting money this year out of this because they have other things, other projects that they're wanting to make happen. But I would like to draft it and give it a try. It's also there's no matching funds, so the only cost really is me drafting the documents and you signing them.
What about Hollister?
Hollister is one of the agencies that got a direct allocation
okay.
last year. This specific award is a recovery act based off of last year's grants.
Okay.
It's funds that are still held over.
All right.
So
they received a their portion, and so
actually the way it's written, I can ask for equipment or software, so forth, for Branson, Taney County, and Hollister, as long as we're part of one project, even though we got a direct allocation. But my feeling from talking with the state is there's $1 million statewide available for this, and they have other plans. So I'm thinking that if I can narrow it down to the agencies that didn't get a direct allocation, that we'll have more success in actually getting some equipment through this.
So with the other grant, we got a direct allocation, and so did Branson. That's the $27,000-something, correct?
Yes, sir. And that's this year's. That's 2010.
Okay, and we got one last year.
Yes,
but
sir.
But these cities didn't. Why would it be the county that would apply for the grant for those cities or villages? I mean, we don't control those entities, obviously.
You would basically be applying on behalf of the project at the county level. For instance, I'll pick one. Merriam Woods could apply But each agency could apply separately. However, they have a better chance of getting funded at the state level if it's shown that it's a project with multiple agencies communicating and working together, and our project is at the county level, so it would be the county level that would apply.
I'm not saying they wouldn't want the money, but is it presumptuous of the county commission to apply for the villages without them requesting it, I guess?
Well, in this process, we'll have an MOU just like we're drafting between Taney County and Brant's, and that'll be part of the paperwork that comes over. And again, it's totally the county's option. That's why I'm seeking your approval to do it.
Motion to, I guess you're going to do the same thing, fill the paperwork out. Before I say motion, you're going to fill the paperwork out, bring it for Chuck to sign, so you'll have them sent to Bob so he can review them before. I think this time it's a little short, it's June 8th.
Yes, sir.
There's going to have to be MOUs that are entered into by the villages as well, right?
They are, and I don't anticipate that those will be done before the grant is applied for. So just each one of those is aware that I'm going through this process. Okay. Although MOUs aren't drafted yet, they're actually not required as part of this grant.
But so you've spoken to the entities, and they want the county commission to go forward with the application? Or?
I have. Now, we haven't drafted the MOUs, but that will take place before this is all completed. You'll receive the grant application paperwork, and I will have those MOUs prepared. They probably won't be signed by the time that we go ahead and apply for the grant, but we can always decline it if it is awarded, if one of them chooses not to participate.
Jim, you're going to continue with your motion?
Yeah, so motion to approve the application to these, I guess it would be the
JAG
grant, but it's not. It's more than just the JAG grant, isn't it?
It's a state-allocated JAG grant.
State-allocated JAG grant.
And do you want to name those cities? Or does that need to be done?
I don't believe so, sir.
Okay, I'll second the motion.
Okay. We got a motion and a second. And any questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again for your work.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
Do you need an extra set of those documents?
I don't think so.
I'll take an extra set. I think Rick wants mine.
Okay, you guys doing all right? Ready to move on to DocuWare?
I'd like to.
You need 2 minutes?
We already cut 30 minutes out to squeeze something in, so
all right, we'll
no
take
more than five.
2 to 5 minute break.